Good morning or afternoon, everyone. Welcome to emforum.org, and we are very glad you could join us today. I am Amy Sebring, and will serve as your moderator. And for our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Our topic today is the National Academies Transportation Research Board, also known as the TRB, their report, Communication with Vulnerable Populations, a Transportation and Emergency Management Toolkit, published this past September. We'd like to feature new resources for emergency managers, and this toolkit looks like a good one. And although the focus is on transportation, we expect the communication tips are applicable to a wide range of issues. Please note you can access a PDF version of the report online for free, and of course that was linked from our announcement and from our background page. Now first, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation and then proceed to your questions and comments. Now if you have any difficulty with live meeting, you can click on the feedback drop-down menu up here at the top right to indicate you're having a problem. And then my associates, Ava Jean Moore or Lori Weber, will try to assist you via private messaging. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A portion of our program, but we do ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part. We also ask you not to send any private messages to the speaker or moderator as we will be busy with the presentation. We are making live meeting recording and an audio-only MP3 version, which should be available later this afternoon along with a copy of today's slide. And then, of course, the text transcript will be posted early next week. And if you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready and notices of future programs. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Deborah Matherly was principal investigator for this project and is a principal planner with the Lewis Berger Group, Inc. In addition to this project and two others that are in progress, Deborah has directed three major regional emergency planning initiatives in the D.C. area and has been active on the TRB's Emergency Evacuation Subcommittee for a number of years. Also joining us, Kelly Reinhart, also contributed to the toolkit and serves as president of Jane Mobley Associates. Kelly has served in both a project management and researcher role on TRB projects and has practiced in the field of strategic communication and strategic planning for more than 25 years. And, of course, further biographical detail is available from today's background page. Welcome to you both, and thank you very much for joining us today. I now turn the floor over to Deborah to start us off with.
Thank you very much. We're very pleased to be here. We want to reiterate that the Transit Cooperative Research Program, part of the National Academy of Sciences, saw the need for this topic, the communication with vulnerable populations, as early as 2006. They obtained funding in 2008. We started our study in 2009. We completed it in March of 2011. It was printed in August of 2011 and online in September of 2011. And again, as Amy said, despite the title talking about transportation and emergency management, we really expect the potential users will include public health, public information officers, local community agencies, and really anyone who is willing to step up to this issue. Next slide. Let's see. Okay. This is a picture you may be familiar with from Hurricane Katrina. It wasn't just the transportation that failed in Hurricane Katrina and many other disasters. In many cases, it has been the prior outreach to identify those who might need help and identifying the many groups and individuals in every community who knew and who know the people who might need help. Um, It's also interesting that the this project is supporting the FEMA whole community initiative, although they were begun on different tracks, but that they are very complementary. Kelly?
Yes, I would add to Deborah's comment that when we look at some of the language around the whole community principles, this guide, the TCRP guide and toolkit, is really a great how-to resource. If the mandate is to bake a cake, baking a cake without a recipe and instructions can be challenging. And so in many respects, when the challenge is or the mandate is community engagement and at the grassroots level, some how-to instruction on proven processes for how to do that can be most useful to planners and emergency management professionals and transportation professionals for whom community engagement and communication are not their core competencies or their core responsibilities inside their organizations. So the approach in the TCRP toolkit is very supportive to the principles that have been laid out by FEMA for whole community initiatives. When we look at definitions, one of the things that both the panel, and I might just take a quick sidebar and mention that when TCRP, the Transit Cooperative Research Panel, when they opened this study, the response inside the organization was so overwhelming. First of all, they had more than 30 proposers respond to the RFP, and they had more than 40 individuals who had requested to be a part of the project panel. So the interest level and the investment in the subject was very high, both out in the field and inside the TRB organization itself. One of the things that the panel grappled with before the study was launched was, what is our definition of vulnerable populations? And the favor that they did to the research team at the outset was that they agreed amongst themselves as a panel of 40 on that definition before we started. And so we had that as a frame. You'll notice on this slide that we all kept our focus on the Emergency Management National Response Framework definition for special needs populations. And the whole description of functional need areas. And that was the beacon that kept all of our research and all of the products that ultimately emerged in this toolkit. It kept us all on focus. I'll mention here that about 5 years prior to launching this particular project with TRB, Jane Mobley Associates had been engaged in a somewhat similar project for the CDC to develop a workbook for reaching special vulnerable and at-risk populations in public health emergencies. And almost 9 years has passed since we began that work with the CDC, and the whole conversation around defining vulnerable populations is still very vigorous. I think that one of the things that was agreed upon between TRB and our panel and the research team was that we could work on a definition for years, and that would evolve over time. So the focus was to focus on the definition that was available to us, that was being widely used and distributed by FEMA, and then work on the process for engaging people in communities around those population groups and sort of end the discussion on what is a vulnerable population and how do we define that. So you'll see that the list there is pretty self-explanatory. Who is being communicated with? Who are the subjects for communication that are being addressed in this toolkit? Mm-hmm. What the toolkit is and what it isn't. One of the things that we faced as a challenge was, are we going to develop sample messages and communications that communities could look to as examples and guides. And what we learned early on in the research process was that the range of emergency circumstances, the range of community demographics, geography, and other community factors left us so many scenarios that we couldn't begin to craft specific messages as a part of this guide and toolkit. So the focus was on a process for communication. And at the crux of that process is using collaborative partnerships or community-based messengers to deliver messages. And that third bullet in the middle of the slide is really the nugget that explains what this toolkit and guide can help any local community do. They can lay out a process for building and engaging a community in a collaborative partnership where any message can be pushed out about any activity or emergency. So it's the process that matters, not so much what the emergency circumstance is or the message that must be delivered. It's having a process in place in advance of an emergency so that you're ready to do that.
And a little background on the project. We know that transportation and emergency management people have been working together for a long time in security coordination and phases of emergency planning. And at the same time, emergency management may not realize that transportation people do other things as well. Transportation has been involved in environmental justice initiatives. Transit people have broad links to the community in terms of providing paratransit services, for example, and holding community meetings on many different topics. We also know that emergency managers have had some links to vulnerable populations, sometimes through public communications groups, sometimes through public health. But as far as we know, the transportation and emergency management have not worked together in terms of pooling their combined resources and of the other agencies around in terms of working with community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, nonprofit organizations, and through them to the full realm of vulnerable populations that we are discussing here today. So among our project tasks were many of the standard ones, but of interest, in our interviews with experts, we went to geographic regions that had some major disasters, Houston, Florida, California, some other places, and in each one we tried to interview a group of people, some representing the emergency management, some representing transportation, some representing the social service providers, some representing the vulnerable population groups, and getting perspectives from many sides on how things worked, what worked well, what didn't work well, and how things could be improved. So this was one of our starting points. Then another major element was our field tests. We had four focus groups, workshops, one in New Orleans very early on in the project to see, okay, if we're going in this direction, what's going to be important to people, looking at everything from the from what the cover looked like, what the title is, what tools are needed. We had, again, meetings in Maryland and in Kansas City, Missouri, and each time we refined what we had, the tools we had, and what we needed to come up with. and then finally finished up in Irvine, California. And in each of these, we learned some very valuable lessons as to what people were looking for and how this could be usable. So I think from that, we came to a pretty simple outline that has a lot of power in it, that people definitely, one of the big things we heard is, keep it simple. And also that people are going to be coming from this from many different perspectives and many different levels of expertise, and make it easy for people to either jump in the deep end and cherry pick the tools they want, or to start from the shallow end of the pool and just go from the very basics up. And we try to craft it that way and make everything, you can go as deep or as start in as basic as you want. And another element that people mentioned is that come into an organization at any place. It could come in on the executive's desk, and in that case, the executive summary is really geared to somebody, to a decision maker, who is going to look at the first two pages and say, why do I need to care about this? And we say, well, hey, here, ABC, this is why you need to care about this. But we also know that if it comes in at a mid-management level, they're going to need some tools into, for example, how to get their leadership to buy into it. So there's many different aspects to this, all pretty clearly laid out, we believe. Okay.
I'm going to tag on to a couple of things that Deborah just mentioned. One of the things that TRB recognized early on in our study was that the final product that was going to emerge out of this research project was going to look different than a lot of other TRB research projects' final deliverables. Many times when you have a study that includes a literature review, expert interviews, interviews with people in the field, there's a lot of data and very detailed information that ends up in a report. And that is not, I want to assure anyone who's thinking, oh my gosh, I signed up for the wrong webcast and I don't want to read something like this. That is not what our final product was focused on. We did turn in to TRB a very detailed research report that shows all the literature that backs up the foundation of this toolkit. But ultimately, the toolkit itself is designed for people who are working at state, local, and regional levels all around the country who have various geographic and demographic challenges and budget constraints that they have to deal with in their community. So one of the first things that people notice when they pick it up is it's not very thick. It's got a lot of white space. There are literally fill-in-the-blank worksheets that a busy professional can say, I can use this toolkit as my workbook, and it will help me get a job done that might be one of many jobs that I carry out, or it might be one that I don't feel particularly well prepared to do myself, but my agency and I think it's important, so I'm going to undertake this. So we really tried to develop materials that were user-friendly. And as Deborah mentioned, we field tested in four different communities before we went to final draft. And each field test was conducted at a different stage of development of the toolkit. And each time we left a field testing opportunity, we made adjustments and improvements in the product so that by the time we got to final draft, it incorporated the feedback and the input and the ideas of professionals in the field of emergency management and transportation professionals from around the country, and it was designed to meet the needs that they identified. As Deborah said, you can start this at Chapter 1, which is a very beginning of the beginning instructional tool, and it can also be flagged and earmarked to start at halfway through chapter two because you happen to be farther into a process in a particular community. I think that rather than I won't read what's in chapters, you can see that on the slide. But one of the things I'd like to emphasize is on the right-hand side of each slide, as we kind of go through what the different chapters help communities do, is the tools and the templates that are found at the conclusion of each chapter. And this is the component that's like a workbook. It is fill in the blank. One of the things that we heard back from emergency management professionals that we talked to around the country was that in many communities, the emergency manager is either part-time or they're full-time and they wear two or three different hats in the community, but they don't have a dedicated person who can focus on something like community partnership building and community engagement full-time. So we tried to take a lot of the legwork out of this by providing tools and templates that a professional can complete and fill in to sort of ease them through the process. The steps that a community has to go through at the beginning is very important. We only recommend skipping over them if you've already done them. But the collecting community population information is really one of the most critical steps in the process because that is how a community's vulnerabilities are really identified. And one of the things that we used as a baseline in all of our communities, and this came out of interviews for this project and also literature research that was done on a variety of projects by our entire research team. When you get to the end of these slides, you're going to see some credits to other members of this research team in addition to Lewis Berger Group and Jane Mobley Associates. But one of the things that has been found in the research is that part of the community engagement and the community planning process requires that individuals in communities act in ways that emergency managers and transportation and public health professionals need them to act in order to protect themselves and protect the community. And what the research shows is that if you have significant segments of the population in a community that are so poor, they are struggling to meet their day-to-day subsistence needs, they will not be able to hear and respond appropriately to emergency preparedness or response messages that are being pushed out by authorities. So the poverty statistics and the census data does provide a good ground of information in the percentage of a population in any given area that is living at or below the poverty level. And that will help community planners and emergency preparedness officials look at as a baseline, who is going to have the financial means and capacity to respond and behave in the way that we need them to in order for whole communities to be as prepared as possible. So you're going to see some emphasis on poverty and looking at that kind of data in a community.
Mm-hmm. But I'd like to emphasize it's not the only – that's the starting point, but it's not the end point. Okay.
Okay. Chapter 2 really gets into the process of figuring out the best way to reach a range of vulnerable populations, different groups of people who have different functional needs that will make them more challenged in an emergency circumstance. And a network approach is the basis of this entire toolkit, building a network of trusted professionals, volunteers, and CBOs, FBOs, all kinds of entities that already have strong ties to these different vulnerable population groups. And the network becomes the primary conduit of information sharing. And emergency management or transportation or public health or whoever the convener, sometimes it's the Metropolitan Planning Organization that takes on a convening role at the community level, whoever the convener is, they are the entity that takes on the responsibility for building a network. And it is that network that then becomes the conduit for all kinds of information sharing out to communities around a variety of issues.
But I'd like to interject, though, that if you look and see it says build or add to a network, one of the things we heard is people are overwhelmed with meetings. They have so many different groups that they belong to, et cetera, that one of the possibilities may be to find a group that is doing similar things. It may be a group like United We Ride that already organizes the transportation service organizations in an area, and they are not thinking about emergency management necessarily, but this kind, they could be a perfect adjunct, a perfect core group. It's going to be different in every community as to what's already there, but it may be more profitable and easier to build on an existing network than to try to start a new one. Something to think about.
Okay. Using a network to communicate through, and I really appreciate Deborah reminding me of the tapping into existing networks. And Amy said it well when she opened today's presentation, that some of the language and narrative that is in this toolkit is transportation-centric. The project was funded by the Transportation Research Board, so it certainly has transportation agencies as a target audience. But our charge from the Transportation Research Board at the very beginning of this was to always be cognizant of the emergency management audience for this material as well. So there are some tips and some suggestions in the guide that are transportation-centric, but it doesn't get in the way of the steps and the work that needs to be completed. And the network approach to communication says that once you have built, and I want to emphasize that although we're rolling through these chapters pretty quick, the process that we're talking about here is very labor-intensive and very time-intensive. The time frame that it might take a community, if they're starting from scratch, to get to this phase of communicating through a network could be multiple years. It could be months, but it is not something that happens in a couple of weeks and a couple of meetings that have been convened. There is a very intense component of community engagement. And it's one of the things that really struck our project team as we looked at some of the language around whole communities and the whole community principles as articulated by FEMA. Community engagement is a process that evolves over time. And community engagement is what is at the core of developing and fostering the relationships inside of a network that you can rely on when everything goes south in an emergency. So I want to emphasize that we're moving through in our discussion today a process that takes quite a bit of time very quickly. But once the first two chapters work is complete and you have a group of committed organizations and individuals that are coming together on a regular basis around the idea of all hazards preparedness and how a community is going to work together to be prepared, then the process of communicating becomes very second nature.
Okay. Okay. So I'd also like to make note of one of the items in Chapter 3 is the registries. This is something that came up as a major topic. People very much pro, very much con, very much opposed, etc. So we do address it in here in a really a continuum of what may be considered registries, everything from the all community where everyone in the community can get a text alert about an emergency coming up to very specific registries for people who may be in an iron lung or on dialysis. So there we do talk about it, about some of the pros and cons. We suggest you might look at that before you or while you are considering registries, that there's not one size that fits all. Okay. Now, again, one of the important things is understanding that there are many different communities within any given neighborhood, sector, whatever. And really the strength of the communications network builds from underlying organizations and existing community ties. And as FEMA notes in introducing their comprehensive preparedness guide, they say, when the community is engaged in authentic dialogue, it becomes empowered to identify its needs and existing resources to address them. And that's, I think, an important point, that it's not just identifying vulnerable people who need help, but also vulnerable people who have resources who can help themselves. And once they know what's needed and what others are doing. It's also important to note that there are people in any given community who may be very isolated, some by choice, but almost everyone will have at least some safety net of contacts. It may be very fragile. It could be just their Meals on Wheels representative that comes by, or it could be a neighbor, or it could be just the mailman. But people need to be very creative in understanding and enlarging what they consider their community and who their neighbor is.
The last part of the toolkit really focuses on how to sustain this work over time. Some of our field testing and interviews out in communities where some very solid networks are underway and working well have told us that some of these initiatives get started with grant money. Sometimes there's an emergency that happens in a given community or area that really influences the leadership of a community or a state even to say we've got to address some issues of communication, and there will be a lot of movement and a lot of support in the beginning phases. But after time, when the grant money is gone and people have a tendency to forget 2 years after some major emergency how bad it was during the emergency. What do you do with a group of engaged individuals and organizations and public agencies that have invested time in putting this together? It's a challenge to sustain. And so in the closing chapter of the toolkit, we really look at ways to grow a network so that some of the work of keeping it going can be spread out, how to form agreements with individual entities in a network so that you know who's going to be responsible for what in the event of an emergency, using networks as an exercise tool There are many emergency management, transportation, public health, a variety of sometimes all-scale emergencies, such as the earthquake exercise that took place in 2011. And the network can be a tool for conducting exercises and tests of communication capacity in a community. And so some people are having some success in accessing sort of regular funding, either government funding streams or private grant streams, to use networks to test and exercise their communication capabilities for emergency preparedness planning.
Okay. So, as we've said in various ways, really what the toolkit is designed to really build a network, build on existing organizations, and help those organizations increase their capacity to engage and empower all parts of communities. And one of the key aspects that we didn't touch on deeply is in the making meetings work and in the other items, there was a lot about accessible meetings. You may have noticed that in the tools, that everything from the invitations that go out need to emphasize that we are open to whatever needs are out there in terms of it may be providing translators for different languages, to providing provisions for service animals, to asking people not to wear perfumes because there are people who are chemically sensitive. We have all of these things are identified in the tools for accessible meetings. And again, in conducting exercises of the network, that the entire community needs to be engaged. People who are deaf and hard of hearing or who have mobility impairments or who are blind need to be participating in these exercises in order to give real-life feedback of what may happen, what kind of challenges there may be that a sit-in simply cannot do. And finally, it's important to understand that the messenger, the person who knows the people in their community is going to be a far stronger messenger of saying something is wrong, we need to do something now, than a stranger who comes on TV and says, here's whatever you want, trust me. So that in many of these communities, the most vulnerable communities, the people they know are the people they're most going to trust, and that how they are able to transmit the message is very important. And they can only know how to do this in an emergency if they are engaged well before an emergency. You can't come up in the last minute, okay, and expect everything to work out well. So, summing up, be inclusive, be accessible, and listen. The as Amy said, the report can be downloaded from the website here. It can also be downloaded from the TRB.org security pubs, and all of the tools and templates are in a subset of that link under the project reports section. You can get a print copy or a free, you can buy one or get one free as well. And for more information, here's our contact information. It'll be on the web. And again, our partners in this, in addition to, first our senior program officer, Stephen Parker, was just a terrific leader, and Dwight Farrell was the head of the study panel, and the entire study panel was extremely great in giving us good advice. and there were people at JMA and at Berger that helped us as well, and then our supporting team members are listed from on the right-hand side. So we thank everybody, and if there are any questions, I'll turn it back over to Abhijit.
And thank you very much, both of you. This looks like a very well-organized document. Now, to proceed to our Q&A, and in order to submit a question or comment, just click on Q&A on the top menu, and then you'll type it into the top half of the box that opens up. Click on Ask. There is a hand-raising feature there that we do not use. When you do click on Ask, your comment or question goes to an admin panel that I moderate, and I will read who the question is allowed, and then our guests will respond over the bridge. And then I will just type in a text, okay, which will release the text of the question to your panel. Now, because of the way live meeting works, you will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time. Please do keep your comment or question related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And we would also be very interested, and I'm sure Deborah and Kelly would be as well, if you have any experiences in this area, efforts that you've made in your community and so forth. I'm sure we would be interested in hearing about them if you could put them in a nutshell. So we are ready to begin now, and so please do enter your comment or question at any time. And we don't have, okay, here we go. All right, this is from Ken Johnson. He has a comment. He says, I found this document a few weeks ago. It is very helpful. Great guide for all types of things, including meetings in general.
Okay.
Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in learning a little bit about when you took the draft toolkit out to the communities and what that process was like, and did those communities turn around and then take the final draft, and are some of them actually using it? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more, possibly?
We did take it out to the groups. We've let them know when it was released online. I haven't specifically heard back from anyone as to what they're doing with it, but we are hoping to pilot test it, in various ways as soon as some projects can come up. So we're open to follow on.
And I understand you've been going to some conferences and so forth and presenting this material. Do you have any more of those coming up?
Yes, actually we'll be in South Carolina in March. We've been at the Transportation Infrastructure Security Partnership previously at Transportation Research Board meetings. At the FEMA Disability Integration Group. So we're trying to get it out wherever we can.
Fantastic. Did have a comment, a question I'll go ahead and address here. Somebody just wants to know about the recording, and I usually will include that at the end, but I'll go ahead now and say, yes, we do make either the live meeting recording or an audio-only recording available afterwards. Best thing to do is get on our mailing list. You can subscribe from our homepage, and then you'll get a notice and links directly to those when they're available, and that should be this afternoon. Okay, I have one from, Ava Jean. And she asks, how important is promotion or publicity in the development and implementation of the communication network to the success of the community's efforts? Do you know of any examples?
This is Kelly Reinhardt. And I would say promotion may be a little bit more so than media. And by promotion, I would break that down a little bit further into kind of community buzz. One of the things that is really important to getting momentum in a community-based network that is focused on how are we going to make sure that everyone has what they need or does what they need to do in the event of some catastrophic emergency or some other hazard. And one of the things that is important to generate is buzz. And the state of Kentucky has done some excellent work. They have a statewide public health communication network with more than 300 members. And once a year, they convene training workshops around the state for the various members in that network. They always publicize those training workshops with their local and state media. And they've done radio interviews and some television interviews, and the buzz that gets generated both from the workshops themselves that are taking place in sometimes four or five different communities and the media coverage of the workshops has done a great deal to help them grow their network and help improve the basic understanding of why it's there and what its purpose is in the event of an emergency.
Thank you. I have a question from Isabel McCurdy, who asked, what types of transportation were addressed in this toolkit?
Okay. The transportation, again, we were not focusing on the messages or others, but the types of transportation resources that we identify as the type of contacts that people will want to make include everything from, for example, transportation planners at a metropolitan planning organization who may have a great deal of demographic information, other transportation people who may have been working on environmental justice initiatives, as well as transportation operations people, everyone from the transit, the paratransit providers to the bus operators that may know where people need to go and where they're coming from. So, again, as I mentioned, transportation from service providers such as organizations like United We Ride that coordinate transportation from service providers. So these are just among the different groups that we list as potential partners and possibly as conveners of this type of process.
And my earlier point was, although transportation certainly is a subject that you would want to communicate, use the network to communicate about, once you establish this network, you can communicate about all kinds of emergency, you know, information.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. I want to ask Deborah, evidently the TRB has been working in this realm for a number of years, and I understand you've got a couple of follow-on projects. Could you just tell us a little bit about those?
Okay, the one is is for the National Cooperative Highway Research Program. It's about halfway through, farther than that, on all hazards evacuation planning, and that's looking primarily at multimodal and multi-jurisdictional planning, and then the another that is just starting is the again for the National Cooperative Highway Research Program on a guide to regional transportation planning for disasters, emergencies, and significant events, and this one has a different take in that many times what you learn from planning for special events and such can help you in emergency planning and vice versa. So there's some of the same team members, but some different areas as well.
Great, thanks. Another question from Ava Jean, bless her. She says, you mentioned securing leadership buy-in as a tool in your slides. This is always a problem, it seems. Would the same tact work for getting buy-in for other emergency management needs or issues in a community?
Yes, I think our guide on getting leadership buy-in, we've tried to keep it fairly general, and the same as the executive summary is not specifically directed to transportation. It's trying to get emergency managers and other executives higher up to pay attention to this issue. For one, it's the law and has been the law for a long time. And that FEMA and others are paying increasing attention to this issue, which is we think is a great move forward, that FEMA is emphasizing whole community now. It's not the terminology we used going into this project, but I think we are very glad to be headed in the same direction as FEMA in this area.
All right. Well, we seem to have come to the end of our questions or comments. I'll just tread water just here for a moment longer. And Kelly, have you got projects coming up that you want to mention?
I would mention that we have a follow-on task that is attached to this project that we're talking about here today, Communication with Vulnerable Populations. And it is exploring specifically the use of picture-based communication to help vulnerable populations. And in particular, we would be talking about population groups with functional needs that make it difficult for them to read or understand spoken English. They might be deaf and hard of hearing. They might be limited English proficient. They might be low literacy populations. Or they may have some kind of a cognitive disability that impedes their ability to read and understand English language. So we're in the middle of an add-on task where we are developing and testing pictograms, picture-based communication pieces that would help transit and paratransit providers communicate with the riding public in the event of a large-scale emergency or hazard circumstance. And it's very small and focused piece of kind of a larger topic and issue, but we'll be providing some initial data and results back to TRB and TCRP on how well those pictures fared in successfully communicating specific instruction and directions to the riding public.
Oh, that sounds very exciting. When do you expect the outcome of that?
We anticipate our final products and the report of findings back to TCRP by the end of August 2012.
Oh, okay. Coming right up. Okay, I have one more from Ken Johnson. He says, that sounds great, and we have been trying to track down tools in this area. Can EM Forum send out info when this is available? Well, that's very nice. That is one of the things in a wrap-up that I did want to say, and I think we will go ahead and wrap it up today, which is thank you very much, of course, for your time and effort to be with us today and present this information. But please do stay in touch and as these other projects go forward, and so we can keep tabs on it in the future and perhaps have another program.
Sounds great. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, folks, before you run off, please do take a moment to go ahead and complete our feedback form. And I'm so glad that Deborah and Kelly showed the ties to whole community, because we have an exciting announcement, which is we will be hosting another special program on Wednesday, February 29th, 12 noon Eastern, specifically devoted to FEMA's Whole Community Initiative. And we'll be pleased to welcome back David Kaufman, Director of FEMA's Office of Policy and Program Analysis. So please mark that date and time, February 29th, noon Eastern, and that is a Wednesday, and watch for our full announcement, which will come out on our mailing list later this, today. So, again, if you're not on our mailing list, this information got forwarded to you, just go to our homepage, go ahead and subscribe, and then you'll be sure to get the announcement. Until next time, thanks for everyone for participating today. Have a great afternoon. We are adjourned. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you.